This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Hour two of Sharp Money as we move along on this Wednesday afternoon. Joe Cirillo here in for Patrick Maher alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And, you know, we talked about that great guest lineup at the top of the show, Dustin. We're going to get back to the progressive guest line here and welcome in our guy, Cole Thompson, host of SEC Unfiltered, also the Texans Wire managing editor. And Cole, how you doing? Thanks for coming on. I want to start right there with your Houston Texans, man, because this is a team that I think is getting a lot of disrespect this offseason. And, you know, I'm not of the camp that, oh, now that there's film on CJ, D coordinators are going to figure him out. I am high on Houston going into next year. I think they repeat as division champs. I think they clear that win total with relative ease. What's your take on the Texans? Are they set up to keep on chugging along, or do you actually think they will take a step back in year two with D'Amico and CJ?
There's a middle ground, I think, between the two, because the starting point is, yes, they still have a better roster than most is advertised. I mean, you add in Azeez Al-Shaair, a Pro Bowl defensive end, and Danielle Hunter. You get a superstar cornerback that has already flourished in Kamari Laster out of Georgia. You bring in Stephon Diggs. You bring in an ideal replacement for the running game with Joe Mixon, who, when healthy, can be a 1,000-yard bell cow back. But there also were some limitations that some people seem to forget about last year that boasted well in the Texans' favor. Let's start off with the fact that they had a fourth-place schedule, and they also got to play against an underwhelming NFC South as the out-of-conference matchup, where they finished 12 games below 500 as an entire unit. On top of that, now you get a first-place schedule. You also do have the ability to have more film on CJ Stroud. You still have question marks when it comes to the offensive line. You still have question marks when it comes to the defensive interior part. You also do have questions when it comes to the future of D'Amico Autry now that he's suspended for 6 games. How do you replace that production? So overall, when I look at the squad, yeah, they're still a good team. And yes, sometimes records will say, oh, well, they're going to finish with this and they should finish with this. That's not really the case with Houston. In my opinion, if they get to 10-7, that's just as good as some teams going 12-5 with their schedule. I mean, you play 3 games in 11 days between Tua Tagovailoa, Lamar Jackson, and Patrick Mahomes, one of which is on the road and one of which is 4 days after with a shortened week where you got to play on Netflix. So let's not kid ourselves for a second. The Texans are a good team. I don't think that they will regress in terms of being like a 9-8 roster. I have them going 11-6, but I don't know if they've done enough to cross the threshold of being in that conversation alongside the Patrick Mahomes's and Kansas City's or even the Baltimore's and Lamar Jackson's.
Yeah, Cole, see, that's where I'm on the opposite side. I think they're a little bit too trendy, and I think in the NFL, you got to get beat up a little bit before you find your way. And I think we see a lot of teams go through that. I think we're forgetting how things shook out in the AFC South a year ago. A couple things go different way. The Colts are winning that division potentially. Like, there was a lot that went right for Houston. And I'm not saying they're going to be bad. I just think 16-1 to win the Super Bowl. Everyone is on them this year, but you're the one that's going to practice. You're seeing how this team's talking. When you get the vibe from D'Amico Ryans, do you feel he's turning things up a notch? Because now they are the hunted versus the hunter.
No, Dustin, I don't feel like they're turning things up a notch, because they were turning things up a notch last year coming off of finishing with 3 total wins. Like, when he signed on, he was not joining a roster that was going to be known for having underwhelming success. Now, it was all about building off of what we had as a foundation. And then you go ahead and you land a defensive player of the caliber of Will Anderson Jr. And then you find yourself a wide receiver that can be promising like a Tank Dell. And you find yourself a franchise quarterback in CJ Stroud. And you get some quality play from Jimmy Ward. And you get some quality play from Jonathan Grenard, and you get some quality play from Blake Cashman. And then when they cash in on their major deals, you find the replacements that immediately are saying, hey, this is the standard that we have set in Houston. Either strap on in or get the hell out. And that's kind of where you are with this roster. But with that being said, I also kind of agree with you. Indianapolis is flying under the radar. Anthony Richardson was able to cook and slice and dice up Houston's front seven in those first two drives against the Texans in week two. If he stays healthy, I mean, there's a very good shot that we're talking about another quarterback entering that upper echelon of talented players in the AFC.
Wow. Yeah, I agree with you, man. I think Indianapolis is a scary team to look at as long as Richardson can stay healthy. They finally have a receiving core for what feels like the first time in years now out in Indy. I'm very low on Jacksonville, though. I'm not buying into the Jaguars, which is why I still think it is Houston's division, because I think it's between them and the Colts. But, Cole, I want to shift gears a bit and work into the SEC. Of course, you're the host of SEC Unfiltered, and I want to get your feel on the new conference, of course, with the additions of Texas and Oklahoma, and maybe a team that you think, with Georgia and Texas atop everyone's predictions for the SEC, who's a team that you think could surprise a lot of people this year coming out of that conference?
Let's go with the easy surprise and then actually the bold surprise. The easy one, in my opinion, is Missouri. When you look at what they added in via the portal this offseason, guys like Nate Noel and Marcus Carroll, they're not known as SEC running backs, but they're proven productive running backs. One averaged 6.2 yards per play at Appalachian State. The other one was a top five running back in college football last year during his tenure at Georgia State. They still have Mookie Cooper. They still have a very talented wide receiver core headlined by Theo Weiss and by Luther Burden, who for my money is arguably the best wide receiver in college football. They add in some dudes in the transfer portal for the offensive line, too. Caden Green comes on over from Oklahoma. He's a multi-chess piece. Marcus Bryant was a part of an SMU offensive line that last year won the AAC. And their schedule, there's no nothing short of being an easy schedule in conference play. This is about as easy as it's going to get. You have games against Murray State, Buffalo, Boston College, and UMass out of conference. You get to play South Carolina on the road. Your toughest home game is against Oklahoma, at Alabama, at Texas A&M. I think that the squad is going to be a 10-2 roster at worst. They're going to find their way into the college football playoff. And let's go for a sleeper team. I like Kentucky. I really do think that there's something about Lexington every 3 years that just finds magic. You look at what the Wildcats did back in 2018. Terry Wilson balls out. They get to 10 wins. Then you go 2 years later. I mean, 3 years later, you find Will Levis. You bring in the new offense coordinator in Liam Cohen. Look at that. You're 10-3 once again. So it's year three in the process. You go out and you add in Brock Vandergriff, and Dustin knows this very well. I am a giant MCU fan. I am a believer that we live in the multiverse. There is a multiverse scenario where Carson Beck is transferring to Kentucky because Brock Vandergriff 100% won the starting job. He beat out even Stetson Bennett and was the greatest quarterback to ever walk through Athens history. So if I'm getting that with Bush Hanman, if I get that defensive line that I know is really potent, really deadly, really lethal when it comes to the ability to make plays on third and short, you got a schedule that can bode well in Kentucky's favor. I feel like that being 10-2 may not be enough to guarantee them a spot in the playoff, but I am damn sure not sleeping on the Wildcats. Every 3 years, Mark Stoops got something up his sleeves to where the magic is rolling in Lexington.
Yeah, 9 starters back on defense for the Cats. They bring in a transfer for North Texas, Jamori Macklin, who had 1,000 yards and 57 receptions last year. And like on a, for our purposes, betting-wise, day in and day out, week in, week out, betting on the Cats when they're dogs always pays out well. Missouri, I agree, underdog team. Brady Cook for Heisman is going to be in pocket for me. The other hype team is Ole Miss. I love Ole Miss. Both Joe and I like Jackson Dart as a Heisman bet at about 15-1, plus 650 to win the SEC. The question is, do you believe in Lane Kiffin's maturity to bring this all together and capitalize on the moment?
Dustin, see, this is why I come on your show. I don't do it because of we're friends. I don't do it because of I enjoy our conversations off air talking about Mr. Boom or whatever the kid's name is.
AJ.
I do it because you and I think the exact same. Jackson Dart is my pick to win the Heisman Trophy. I have already placed money down starting last year. I believe that he was coming in this year as the number one quarterback in the SEC. I love what they brought back in terms of the offensive personnel. You get Juice Wells from South Carolina. You have Caden Priestcorn fully healthy. You have a cakewalk preseason of a schedule to where you get dismantle teams to begin the season. Furman, Middle Tennessee, Wake Forest, Georgia Southern, Kentucky at South Carolina. Your schedule also bodes extremely well on the back end to where you will be on the national stage. They went out and they added in as much talent as possible for the defensive front. Getting Princeton Uwemanle-Yellen from Florida, getting Walter Nolan, the former defensive number one overall recruit of 2022 from Texas A&M. They bolstered up their secondary. Isaiah Hamilton, if you haven't watched film on him at the University of Houston, go ahead and reward yourself this evening by going and enjoying that tape. Key Lawrence is another name that comes on in at from Oklahoma. They have dudes that are going to be an immediate plug-and-play addition. I like Ole Miss to be in Atlanta this year. I like Ole Miss to be a college football playoff contender. I like Ole Miss to be a team that we're talking about going deep, deep, deep into the postseason.
Cool. I couldn't love it anymore. We're all so high on the Rebels, so high on Jackson Dart. And I've been saying, you mentioned that cupcake schedule to start the season, right? That's the stat padding time for Jackson Dart, right? Last year, he was a 40 touchdown guy. Everyone goes 32 in the air, but he also had 8 on the ground. Pad your stats early on. And then to win the Heisman Trophy, you need a Heisman moment. He's got 2 opportunities for them at LSU, home against Georgia. I think if he pulls one of those games out, there is your Heisman moment for then what would likely be an 11-1 team going to the SEC championship game. Hey, in about 30 seconds here, what does Ole Miss need to do to knock off the Bulldogs that November 9th game at home?
Consistency, consistency, consistency on the ground. They added in another running back in Henry Parrish Jr. that has experience playing with Ole Miss. He was recruited by Kevin Smith, goes to Miami, comes back to the Rebels for his final season. You have Ulysses Bentley. Sometimes it's about the quantity of play, not the quality of play. You lose Quinshon Judkins overnight, but you get a plethora of running backs in that backfield. Milk that clock down. Put as much pressure on Carson Beck to have to deliver strike after strike. Make this a Heisman caliber moment between these two quarterbacks. Let number two be the number one reason why you get to be considered the number one team in college football in the SEC. I like the direction of where Ole Miss is padded in their offensive line as well. Very excited to see the future of what this unit can be.
I like that. Number two on the field, number one in your hearts. Cole, thanks so much for the time, man. Appreciate you.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
The man.
Cole Thompson, make sure you check him out, SEC Unfiltered. Hey, Dustin, before we go to break here, I just added a play to the ticket. Mariners, first 5 money line. It's George Kirby Day up in Boston. Why not? More on Sharp Money when we come back. Who will win the Heisman Trophy? Who will be in the College Football Playoff Final Four? Which teams will surprise and which will disappoint? All of those questions and more can be answered in our 2024 VSiN College Football Betting Guide, which drops tomorrow. Detailed team previews, picks, and best bets just a few clicks away by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber. And not only will you get the College Football Betting Guide, but also our recently released NFL Betting Guide. Check out our current offers right now, including an early bird special for just $1.75 at VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. As we keep it moving here on Sharp Money this Wednesday, July 31st, Joe Cirillo, Dustin Sweetelson coming at you all week long, or at least most of the week, Monday through Thursday. And Dustin, I want to piggyback off of that conversation with Cole there in the last block. We had some really great Heisman talk at the end, and that goes hand in hand with what we wanted to talk about next, some potential long shot bets coming up in the upcoming football seasons, NFL, college ball. You, my friend, have a bit of a reputation for, I would say, scattering the board a little bit, if you will, on some long shot plays. So, you know, what kind of fun can you have with this Heisman board, one that I think is way more wide open than in recent years?
Yeah, look, tequila shots, long shots, back shots, in that order preference. So, you know the deal. I'm not afraid of taking shots in this market.
Definitely, I do.
A few years ago, I had Stetson Bennett 100-1 very early in the year. He gets off to a crazy start. It shortens up. It allowed me to maybe look at some flexible options, right? He ended up going to New York, being invited, did not win the award, but it was a fun ride, right? And if you capitalize on the moments and the movement, you can make money off these tickets. So I don't mind taking some crazy shots deep for quarter unit, somewhere in that range, and if it's right, hitting it again later. But when I look at my approach for this award, Joe, it's so narrative driven, and it's kind of disappointed that the Heisman Trophy market has become best or quarterback on the best team. And to me, that's not what it's about. I truly believe most outstanding player in football, which is why I thought Ndamukong Suh a while back had a legitimate shot at winning this award, right? Like, there's so many guys that have been glossed over just because the quarterback on the best team has ended up winning the award. Maybe the 12-team playoff opens it up. Maybe because it's not one loss and you're completely out of the playoffs, maybe that leads it so that we have some other guys who can work themselves in the mix with monster seasons. So the way I'm approaching this is kind of looking at the guys that want to hit the hardest at the top of the board that I think are the most obvious choices. Then there's like a middle tier of long shots. And then there's, oh, this is kind of crazy, but I want to be on this in case the situation plays out how I think it's potentially able to. It may not be likely, but it does feel like there is a world where this guy could go off in this system, and all of a sudden you have a 150-to-1 ticket that's shortened up and you can do something with it.
So I agree with you when you say that it shouldn't be the quarterback on the best team winning the award. I think in a little bit of fairness here, it's more so a quarterback on a you know, the best quarterback on a New Year's Six Bowl team, which now translates to probably the best quarterback in the playoff. I do think that is a bit of a prereq. Right now, you got to make the playoff with the expansion to 12 teams to be considered for the Heisman. I mean, if it was just the quarterback on the best team, Stetson Bennett would have undeservingly won the award. By the way, if you had 101 ticket on Stetson Bennett to win the Heisman, I wonder what the price on a ticket would have been for Stetson Bennett to DM my ex-girlfriend when we were dating, because that may or may not have happened. So I'm loving the fact that his career has gone downhill since college. But Dustin, when you look at non-quarterbacks who might be deserving, it's a rarity. I believe only two non-quarterbacks in the last dozen years, maybe the last 10 years, have won this award. Devonta Smith, of course, notably from Alabama. Do you think there's anyone this year that realistically, outside of the quarterback position, can win this?
Okay. Realistically, I see one with a path. Now, there's a few others that I don't think are totally insane, but a lot has to go right for it to play out. The most notable one to me is Ollie Gordon, because I think when people look at Oklahoma State and what they have coming back this year, and as kind of a team that should be able to recruit best in the Big 12, Oklahoma State has the money to do so, right? And Ollie Gordon's a guy that they rode deep into the season a year ago. Now, they have Alan Bowman at quarterback. Alan Bowman's a guy who can't stay healthy. And Ollie Gordon last year had 1,700 rush yards. He had 21 touchdowns. Obviously, there's a bit of concern about wear and tear. But I think when you look at the way Mike Gundy wants to play and limit the mistakes from the quarterback position, they're not truly airing it out like they did back in the day with Brandon Whedon and Justin Blackman. I think Ollie Gordon is their ticket to winning the Big 12. Defense, ball control, electric playmaker on the ground. He can catch the ball a bit as well, but it's more about controlling the clock, and Ollie Gordon brings that with a big play ability. So I think Ollie Gordon was a guy that jumped out to me when I thought, is there a non-quarterback out there who can win this award? Ollie Gordon right now, 75-1. He will be someone I have and hope that he gets off to a hot start.
I don't hate that, especially, I mean, at that price, I love it. But the reason that I don't hate it as something that could potentially be a realistic situation we're looking at is because I mentioned making the playoff as being a prereq.
Yes.
Well, if Oklahoma State makes the playoff, that means that they'll overtake two teams that are favored ahead of them in the Big 12, Utah, Kansas State. Very realistic scenario here where the Big 12 gets just one playoff team. So if Oklahoma State is in a position where they are talked about as a playoff team, that will be largely due to the success of Ollie Gordon. And so I think that the narrative there would help him. Obviously, you know, if they miss the playoff, then it's just a long shot ticket that you say, ah, well, it was worth a shot, and you throw it away. But if they're in the playoff conversation, I think he will be live. At the very least, that price will have come down, I think. So it's a really good play.
And the Big 12 as a whole, I think, is an opportunity if you can hit on the right value at this point in the year, because I do think it's wide open. I think there's probably four or five teams who can win it. In the same regard, I do think there's a path for Cam Rising at 40-1 because of that, right? Cam Rising's like 32 years old. He's probably older than Stetson Bennett at this point, sliding into your girl's DMs. But I think a lot of these numbers haven't factored in, well, what if the Big 12 goes off? That's why I like Avery Johnson. That's why he's one of my favorite Heisman bets, because I think there's an opportunity where the number's not correlating to the chaos that the Big 12 could bring us. It's not obvious who's going to win it. It's not obvious who's going to go off, and they have a lot of interesting guys within the league.
In all fairness, Rising or Bennett might be a little more age appropriate. I think the X I'm talking about right now is already about 35, okay. So probably better suited for. But with the Big 12 and the lack of defense that they play in that conference, normally a Cam Rising is not a guy you'd look to and say, oh, yeah, he's a Heisman caliber quarterback. But, you know, there's an element of having the Heisman moment and having team success. There's also an element of stat padding. And if there's a conference where there are some defenses you can stat pad against, not the SEC, it's not the Big 10, it is certainly the Big 12. any other quarterback long shots on your board? Some guys who you think, whether it's a favorable schedule lining up just right for them, or maybe that, you know, they've got a good system that they're working with, potential transfers. Who stands out that you say, I don't know if they'll win the award, but that price isn't right?
Yeah, look, I'm going to go out on a limb on this guy. I think Brady Cook is being overlooked at Missouri. We just touched on the schedule with Cole Thompson last segment. And I think there's a lot of opportunities if we're going to go quarterback, where Brady Cook could be on a Missouri team that has a very easy draw when it comes to the schedule. And that defense lost a lot of pieces a year ago, could end up being more shootouts. He returns his entire receiving core, right? I think because of that, he could end up putting up monster numbers here. No Georgia, no Texas, going to A&M and Alabama. Those are two rough games. But if he steps up and has big moments in those contests, all of a sudden 40-1 of Brady Cook feels like a fun bet. And then the other one I really love, Joe, is Avery Johnson. He's a little trendy. He's a little sexy because he has the mullet and he runs around and he's undersized. But I think when you look at his ability to not only do things through the air, but also with his feet, and Kansas State wanting to control the clock, their coach, Chris Klieman, is one of the best against the spread. Reason being, he knows how to hold on to the football and not mess things up. With that, I like Avery Johnson, a guy who can score through the air, can score on the ground. I like Kansas State to win the Big 12 because of that. I also like Avery Johnson to win the Heisman, correlating to what you said before.
Yeah, I think that Cook is a really interesting guy to look at in Missouri, only because, you know, Missouri gets forgotten about pretty frequently when you talk about the top dogs in the SEC, but can they get a chance to go to Atlanta? That schedule really lines up beneficially for the Tigers there. And, you know, it just comes down to beat the teams that you're supposed to, right? It's the same stuff we talk about, the same formula that we discuss with Ole Miss having success this year. Beat the teams that you're supposed to, Dustin. And then when you have only one or two really difficult ones on your schedule, if you steal one, all of a sudden you're sitting pretty.
Yeah, I mean, that's the name of the game right now, especially in that league. And then I'll throw out a couple crazy ones. Maybe we'll touch on them a little bit later. Will Rogers, 130-1. Will Rogers is up in Washington. Let's remember what Jed Fish was able to do with a very young offense at Arizona a year ago. Will Rogers went to Washington to play for Kalen DeBoer. DeBoer went to Alabama. He stayed with the Huskies because there wasn't a path to playing down in Tuscaloosa. Rogers is heralded in the SEC, has all sorts of records across the board in stats. I think Will Rogers, there's a chance he puts up crazy numbers where it's undeniable no matter how bad Washington is.
Washington only projected for 10th in the Big Ten. That's even behind Rutgers. More crazy long shot bets that just might work on Sharp Money after this. Halfway through hour two here on Sharp Money. Joe Cirillo here filling in for Patrick Maher most of the week alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And Dustin, I want to keep that conversation going here that we were just having, some long shot bets focused mainly on the college realm. I want to translate that over to the NFL because there are some juicy award markets to look at in the NFL. And, you know, just starting with the MVP race, if you go just, I believe, 12 guys down the board, you find Jared Goff. I mean, this has ranged anywhere from 22 to upwards of 30-1. I got in at 27. I believe the best price now is 25-1. I mean, some people might look at that and say 25-1 for the MVP, crazy long shot. I look at that and I say crazy good value because I think this is actually a really realistic play on Jared Goff here to win the MVP.
Well, the big knock on Jared Goff all these years, small hands, can't play outdoors, can't play in the cold. He's not going to have to play very many games outdoors this year. A lot of domes on the schedule for him. He's going to have to go to Chicago, to Green Bay, but everything sets up very early in the year where he's going to be indoors. Because of that, I think he's going to put up monster numbers. But on top of that, you have to remember a few things. One, Ben Johnson is staying. Continuity in the NFL, staying with the same system year after year, you only get better. On top of that, everything I'm hearing at Alliance camp, Jameson Williams is taking off. And Jameson Williams, had he not been hurt in college, would have been an absolute like top five pick. He's a stud of a receiver, an absolute burner on the outside. Now you get Amon-Ra St. Brown, a guy you can throw to consistently, be a reliable target. But now you have someone who can stretch the field and keep defenses honest in Jameson Williams. And then a guy I know you like for Offensive Player of the Year, Jahmyr Gibbs. I'm with you on that play. And I think a number that you found is way better than I've seen because I think Jahmyr Gibbs is going to make David Montgomery look like a dinosaur this year. His ability to catch the ball and be explosive in space, that's going to be such a next step up for this offense. And I think Jahmyr Gibbs is absolutely live in that market as well.
Yeah, when you look at these Lions' weapons and these options that they have to go to on offense, it's just scary, right? If you want to pigeonhole yourself and look just strictly at the receiving core and look at what it did a year ago, obviously Jamison Williams missed a lot of time a year ago. So you might look at it and say, well, they got Amon-Ra St. Brown, but what happens if defenses target him and zone in on him? Well, if you're asking that question, you obviously don't follow ball that closely. Because what happens when defenses target Amon-Ra St. Brown? Sam Laporta happens, 900 receiving yards for a tight end as a rookie. Jahmyr Gibbs happens. Jamison Williams happens. I mean, you blink and this guy is going to have 30 yards of separation between your second best cornerback and himself. The Lions are going to be scary. They're also so good and so sound in the trenches on that O-line that Jared Goff is going to have all day, right? Not a mobile quarterback. Nowadays, when we want to play MVP tickets, we're looking for guys who can kill you in two ways, in the air and on the ground. Goff's never going to kill you on the ground, but he doesn't have to with that system. I just think that Detroit is set up for so much success. I love your point on Ben Johnson. I mean, this guy was a surefire thing to be the head coach of the Washington Commanders, and he pulled his name out of consideration, stayed put, job's not finished. I mean, Detroit, to me, it's like MVP Jared Goff. Gibbs is intriguing for Offensive Player of the Year. They're live as heck for the Super Bowl. Every way that you can bet Detroit, I mean, the fact that you're getting plus 135, as good in some markets as plus 150 on them to win the division is nuts. Any way you can bet Detroit, I absolutely love. But yeah, let's pivot a little bit to the Offensive Player of the Year. I found 50-1 on FanDuel this morning. I'm going to double check that price right now.
That's a big number.
And that's a big disparity from, you know, other books having like 26-1, 50-1, Jahmyr Gibbs, Offensive Player of the Year. All the attention is on Saquon right now because of the versatility that Philadelphia is going to have him work into that offense, right? Pass game, run game. Jahmyr Gibbs is that, but younger, less injury prone. I think there is scary potential here.
Yeah, see, I think the only concern you have here, I think Jahmyr Gibbs is going to be a guy that makes a lot of big plays for the offense. My only concern, and I liked it at 28-1, so obviously I also like 50-1, but it's that David Montgomery will be a touchdown vulture. That is my only fear with this bet. And I do think in this market, that touchdown market, right, the ability to pile up those scores, that could be a deciding factor if another running back, right, is in the mix and has, like, a lot more scoring, like, scores than Jahmyr Gibbs has. That's my only concern. However, I will say this about Gibbs. He's a guy who could take a 10-yard pass out the distance and score a touchdown on his own. But I like this play where you're coming from. I think he fits this offensive scheme perfect. Again, what do we say they want to do? Amon-Ra, they'll hit 7 to 10 times a game, short passes. Jamison Williams deep. You mentioned Laporta over the middle. That opens things up for Gibbs. Gibbs has a massive opportunity here to have chunk yard plays consistently every week. So, yeah, he makes a lot of sense for Offensive Player of the Year.
We saw that a lot with Saquon when he was a giant younger in his career. The guy everyone talks about now is a potential pick for Offensive Player of the Year. You just throw a little check down, a little screen, and you let him do all the work. And that's exactly the kind of impact that Jahmyr Gibbs will have on this offense. How about you, though, for an MVP long shot? We spent so much time talking about the Heisman Trophy and could a non-quarterback win it. The MVP seems like even more of a quarterback's only club than the Heisman, but there's someone you're interested in taking a little sprinkle on.
Look, I had him this year or last year at around the same number in season. It was a few weeks in, and I played it out perfect with Christian McCaffrey for MVP. I had 45-1, I believe, and then Brock Purdy blew up against the Ravens on national TV in a standalone game. After that, things flipped. Brock Purdy got longer. Christian McCaffrey got shorter. Now, the concern when you're going to bet on Christian McCaffrey is always how durable is he going to be? But I think with the way things shaking out with Brandon Ayuk right now, we don't know what his future is. And if he gets traded, I think this offense runs more through McCaffrey with his pass-catching ability in the backfield. I think he will get a lot of credit for making up for the production they'll lose from Ayuk. And I do think there is a tendency with people in the narrative about this team to look at them and never give Brock Purdy the real credit. And I think if McCaffrey makes up that production, has another monster year like he did last year when he won Offensive Player of the Year, I think 40-1 just is a little bit too long for a guy that they could potentially build everything around every single week.
I mean, if this guy gives him 2,000 all-purpose yards, he's got to be in the discussion. He's got to be live 40-1 at a price like that. Look at the other names surrounding him in that price range, yeah. Right? No one there seems like a realistic choice, right? Are you going to take Kirk Cousins to win the MVP? Caleb is a rookie, right? Kyler, who, you know, looks like a rookie or a toddler. I mean, are you going to take any of those guys to win the MVP? One guy whose name stands out to me, not for the MVP, but because I'm intrigued by his team on that list, Baker Mayfield. Dustin, at plus 330, I like Tampa Bay more than I think anyone I've talked to win the NFC South, to repeat atop that division. I am not high on Atlanta. I think they have a lot of talented individuals. I'm curious to see how they're all going to gel and mesh together. I don't like that they're odds-on favorites to win the NFC South. I think that that's too much praise when you have Raheem Morris coming in first year at the helm in Atlanta. Kirk Cousins coming in first year as the quarterback in Atlanta. Didn't start on a great note with Michael Penix getting drafted. You know, you've got the talented individuals. Are they a good team yet? I don't know. We know this Tampa team plays together under Todd Bowles. We know Baker is chippy. He went there. He proved it last year. He got paid. But a cat like Baker, I don't think him getting that paycheck makes him any less chippy. I like Tampa plus 330 in that division.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned because they lost Dave Canales, but it sounds like Baker Mayfield loves Liam Cohen, the new offensive coordinator. Couple notes about this team. I had them last year 3-1 to win the division. Did well for me. They won it. They're getting younger. I think that's a big theme that is going under the radar. People are not noticing. The last few years, they've mixed in a lot of these younger guys, and they're playing well, especially on defense. Tryon Shoyenka, the outside linebacker edge, he's playing more. Can't see the D end out of Pitt playing more. Obviously, Vita Vea is a freak in the middle on that defense, but I like how they're getting younger on defense. Levante David's still there, the grizzled veteran to lead things. But on offense, you know what I'm noticing? They only had one running back a year ago, Rashad White. And Rashad White's fine, but you need someone to compliment him. The word is Bucky Irving looks good down in camp, and it's weird. I keep seeing quotes about Jalen McMillan, who I loved at Washington, being mixed in. I think this is a really deep receiving core. Obviously, we know Evans. We know Godwin's getting older, has to stay healthy. But McMillan, if he can be a guy for this offense, I don't hate your play. I think when you're betting a bet like this, you're not just doing it because you like the Bucs. You're doing because the number doesn't reflect their chance of winning the division. There's no locks in this world. I think we get caught a lot of times, people saying, oh, that's 100% going to hit. That's why I'm betting it. I know I'm right. Don't let your ego get in the way. You're going to go 50-50 a lot of times. But if you're getting 3-1 on a team that you think can win a division because another team is being overvalued in this market, which Atlanta, it seems like they are, with all the changes coming in one offseason, I think there's value there. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, there is no world where laying odds, laying juice, $1.20 on Atlanta, Dustin, is a smart bet for a future. You never want to lay money with a future to begin with. But there's no world where doing that with a team like Atlanta that has as many question marks as they do is a smart bet. Tampa Bay, when you look at the value, you might say, well, why not take them to make the playoffs plus $1.45? That division's probably not getting a wild card team. If you think they're going to make the playoffs, take them to win the division plus $3.30, best price on the market. When we come back, one of my favorite segments, three up, three down, only on Sharp Money. Guys, don't go anywhere. If you want winners, we've got them. We've got best bet articles at VSiN.com, like Adam Burke's daily MLB write-up. Best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, and more only on VSiN.com. Stop wasting time and make sure you check them out today. Hey. Be like me. Make it a part of your morning routine. I know Dustin and I do that every morning. We wake up, pour ourselves a nice tall cup of hot black coffee, and head over to VSiN.com. That is how you drink your coffee, right, Dustin?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought this up. You mentioned that you started your morning routine. You only mentioned that you made coffee. This is now the second time. I traditionally black in the morning. Maybe later in the day I'll mix some stuff into it, like almond or oat milk, but I got to know the Joe Cirillo morning routine because I feel like there's moisturizer involved on the face. I feel like the skin, like, gets a good treatment. I need to know what you go through, maybe some oil in the hair. What are we talking about here?
It's actually very much, if you want to know my routine, just watch American Psycho. It's exactly what Christian Bale does every day, you know, with the face. He's got like 18 different face products every morning. Words of affirmation in the mirror, you know, that kind of stuff. Clean up some blood on my carpet. No, the morning routine is simple, man. Wake up, a big cup of hot black coffee, because I'm big on intermittent fasting, which is actually a little difficult when you're doing Sharp Money, because this noon to 3 Pacific slot, normally I'll eat for the first time around noon or 1. I've been bumping it up to like a yogurt at 11:30 and then nothing else until like 3:30 to just break the fast and ease my body in. But black coffee to start. And then I'll do, you know, when I'm doing Sharp Money, I'll have like a yogurt at 11:30. And then this cup that you see on air, this has a little bit of creamer in it. It's this is cold brew with Trader Joe's brown sugar oat milk creamer. It's delicious. And it's like next to no calories because it's Trader Joe's. So that's the coffee.
It's not often for me. I can sit here and do something with someone. I can say, that is the softest thing anyone's ever said to me. What is in that cup? What is the creamer?
Brown sugar.
Oh, my God. I finally understand from Mighty Ducks the term cake eater. You're a cake eater. That's what you are.
Dustin, let's get, before I get eviscerated anymore on this show, let's get into 3 up, 3 down, man. Yeah. We've got a lot of intriguing pitchers to look at today. Let's start with the guy coming off the no-no. Dylan Cease, first up.
I have some notes on pitchers off a no-no as well, but first let's look what Dylan Cease has done. A few outings ago, he noticed he was doing something wrong in his mechanics. He has since tweaked things, and he's been on an absolute tear. So last 5 starts, we'll give you a big sample size first. 32.2 innings pitched, a 2.48 ERA, 43 strikeouts, a .77 whip, 4 quality starts. I had him preseason 22-1 to win the Cy Young. He's back there at 22-1 after being really long for a long time, Joe. And some notes I want to throw your way on no-hitters. I did this a year ago after Michael Lorenzen threw a no-hitter. So this was back August 10th, 2023. Prior to that, 10 other non-combined no-hitters since 2021. That's the sample size we're working with. Starting pitchers in those starts immediately following their no-hitters. They went 3-7, a 5.60 ERA, and they averaged 4.82 innings pitched. Lorenzen, following his no-hitter last year, 7 runs, 6 earned, in 3 1/3 innings pitched. Now, we had a no-hitter earlier this year, Ronel Blanco. He bucked the trend.
Yeah, he followed up strong, right?
Yeah, he bucked the trend with 6 innings, 1 hit, 0 earned after his no-no. The question is, what camp are you in today when it comes to Dylan Cease? Because he's taking on Kershaw and the Dodgers, about a $1.35 favorite at home tonight. And I would normally go with my trend that says, more than not, the pitcher off a no-hitter doesn't last long and doesn't perform as well. However, because Cease did this with a tweak to his mechanics over the last few weeks, I think there's a chance he keeps this thing up. So it's a stay-away spot for me. Which camp are you in, Joe?
I think if you're going to bet anything here, Dustin, I'm not siding with either of these pitchers because, I'm with you. Normally, when a no-hitter is thrown, I'm going to fade the guy next start. Now, you know, I'm actually remembering this off the top of my head. I bet on Ronel Blanco in the start after his no-hitter. I went back to him. Under 2.5 earned, he went, what was it, like 6 scoreless to start after? So that worked out for me. But normally, because of that trend, I'll stay away. If I'm going to play anything in this game, I just checked the total. If you saw me looking down, I was looking at the total for this. 6.5. That is shockingly low to me. I might look to go over 6.5 in this one. Cease is a guy with a great fastball. Dodgers are a fastball hitting team. Kershaw doesn't really wow me much anymore. He's in the tail end of his career. That's too low to pass up, isn't it, Dustin?
Yeah, Kershaw's made 1 start this year, and he got hit around 4 innings, 6 hits, 2 earned, 6 Ks against San Francisco on Thursday. But on top of that, San Diego in the month of July hitting .292 against lefties with an .842 OPS. And you look at a guy like Manny Machado, who has feasted on southpaws throughout his career. Lifetime versus Kershaw, .325, that's 13 of 40, 4 home runs. I think this is a lineup in San Diego that's primed to potentially knock Kershaw around. Yeah, the over would make sense to me.
Yeah, 6.5 at some shops. Others have it 7, but juice to the under. I mean, this is not something I thought of even looking at. And now, see, I was picturing this to come in at 8.5. Now seeing this at 6.5 or 7, I might have to add it to the official card. Dustin, second up, we've got a starter who didn't Framber Valdez throw a no-hitter this year?
Might have been a combined no-hitter. I don't know if he threw one this year. Maybe it was last year. Okay. I could be wrong on that. But Framber got off to a really slow start this season, and he's picked things up, especially of late. Over his last 5 starts, 25 innings, 2.16 ERA, 30 strikeouts, a 1.24 whip, and 3 quality starts within that. So one not-so-great start. The rest of them were really, really good for Framber Valdez, who is the ace of this Astros team, not just because he's been good, but because it seems like every other pitcher for them has been on the IL at some point this season. And right now, Framber Valdez taking on the Pirates and Jake Woodford. That line, -218, +180 on Pittsburgh, and the total is set at 8, Joe.
Yeah, it was last year for Valdez. No-hitter against Cleveland on August 1st. Next start out, exactly a week later, got 6 days of rest. Went 7, allowed 6 earned to the Baltimore Orioles. Got hit around pretty hard there, coming off the no-no. Dustin, who is third up, my man, speaking of Cleveland?
Well, you know, 3 up, 3 down, we try to look at people we can bet on. And I'm not saying you should bet this, but I think maybe the conversation should at least be had when it comes to the American League Cy Young Award, because Emmanuel Clase has been absolutely lights out. He has a 0.72 ERA in 51 games, right? He has 43 strikeouts in that span, 33 saves. He has been incredible on the back end of the best bullpen in baseball. Clase has been freaking awesome. And I'm just saying, Joe, someone's got to float it out there. And on a short slate, we had limited options for 3 up, 3 down. So he became our third member of this segment.
Wow. Emmanuel Clase +10,000 currently on DraftKings. I mean, he's behind Framber Valdez, Luis Castillo, Taj Bradley even ahead of him. I don't hate it. I don't. If this, the thing is with a closer, one or two bad outings could balloon the ERA. If this holds up, I don't hate it. I don't hate it. Scooble and Burns are going to have to take a step back, though. It's become a two-horse race. Who's your first down in this segment, Dustin?
So Logan Webb, and he is starting at home today where he is significantly better, although not as good this year as he's been in years past. But over his last 4, he's not been very good. 6.65 ERA in 23 innings pitched. Just 18 strikeouts, 1 quality start. The Giants today taking on the Oakland Athletics. That's probably the one benefit if you want to bet on Logan Webb today, because they're facing Ross Stripling. However, I would tell you this Oakland offense has been on fire of late. Lawrence Butler's been a revelation. Brent Rooker continues to mash. I can't believe he's still on that roster. So a tough matchup for Logan Webb despite being at home where he's good, but he's not been good in the grand scheme of things over his last 4.
Now, I've got a play in this game, Dustin, but Ross Stripling is your second down, so dive into that, and then I'll give my play after we analyze both starts.
Yeah, Ross just hasn't had a great year. He's just been a veteran there going through it. He has an ERA at almost 8 over his last 4 in 19 and a third innings pitched, a 1.16 whip. It feels like an over game to me if the wind's blowing in the right direction.
Yeah, so my play in this one, Logan Webb to record the win, +105 on DraftKings. A pretty big variance there considering the Giants are more than $2 favorites. Now, Webb has stunk this month, but prior to his last home start against Toronto, had a 2.13 ERA at home this year. Stripling's been absolutely atrocious. Webb also still continues to go deep into games. If he gives you 6, even 7, leaves with a lead, I like Webb to get the win +105. And Dustin, in about 15 seconds, who is third down on your list?
Wyatt Langford went from 50-1 to the favorite for AL Rookie of the Year. And in the last month, he's now fallen deeper down the board. Colton Cowser's back to being the favorite over at DraftKings because Langford's hit .226 with just 2 homers, 2 steals, and a .657 OPS in the last month.
Yeah, the guy's got 6 home runs. I never understood why he was the favorite in that market. AL Rookie of the Year wide open. Maybe the time to get back in on Luis Gil. Hour 3 up next on Sharp Money, and we're kicking it off with my guy, Lee J. Duzible. Don't go anywhere. Stay locked in here on VSiN.